Chema. First of all, let me express deeply heartfelt gratitude for everyone involved in creating this wonderful space. And a word that came to me when, looking at the garden, it's been blossoming every year. I don't know this term, whether it exists in the Vedas or not, but the word that comes to me is, it is Pushpa Yajna. It's a wonderful space where it seems that something like the very soul of Auroville is offering itself to the Divine Mother. So if you ask me, this again a personal impression, that just as Matri Mandir is the central part of Auroville, this is something like that, an annex to the soul, which where yajna is going on. And while outwardly we may not understand its significance, because as human beings we love the loud drama of life, whereas some of the most beautiful things happen in whispers. The soul whispers to us. It doesn't speak in through the beating of drums, as the mother has said, that the victory of a new world, the advent of a new world, is not announced by the beating of drums. So my gratitude for all those who are involved, and I wish more and more people from all over the world join in this Pushpa Yajna to make this place come about, because it's a big labor, it needs money, everything else. So I do hope that, anyways, its destiny is to bloom. But when we join in this effort, it's so much the good for us. So this is a little expression of gratitude, and then we come to the subject. But again, before even touching upon gratitude as a way of life, because we are just on the, what shall I say, post-eve of Sri Aurobindo's birthday, and the heart feels always full of gratitude towards Sri Aurobindo and the mother for a number of reasons. I mean, I could go on and on that the fact that we exist, we owe it to them. And I mean it in all earnestness, because, of course, we all exist. So one would say, why Sri Aurobindo and the mother? But what is the meaning of existence if it is meaningless? And before Sri Aurobindo gives us a meaning, we have one of the two choices. Or rather, humanity had one of the two choices. Either you make pact with an imperfect life, a limited life, and as Umar Khayyam says in one of his poems, make the most of what yet we can, until we too into the dust descend. Dust unto dust, under dust to lie, sans wine, sans song, sans singer, sans end. So that's one kind of scientific materialism approach, where, well, we are waves on time sea, and while we are here, let's make the most of it. And the most of it is a personal most. And we know the limits of that. And those who believe that that's the ultimate of life, obviously this place is too vast for that consciousness. On the other hand, there are those who felt distraught with life as it is, and they were looking for a way, and there is an alternative way offered, a door of escape. A door of escape into the beyond, into nirvana, into the silence ineffable, into moksha, into some heaven beyond. But there have always been on earth people, now they are growing in number, who didn't choose either of the options, who were looking for yet another option. See, so there have been people, I'm sure many of us, at least for me, it was always these two are not options. So, what is the other option? We do aspire that this world becomes a beautiful place. Call it terrestrial perfection. Of course, we all have our own idea of what an ideal place is. But that aspiration has never really died since the inception of conscious and thinking man. And for the first time in the entire spiritual history of mankind, mankind has striven to make this world a better place in several ways. But first time we have a definitive answer and a definitive way, which is why I feel we can be eternally grateful to Sri Aurobindo, because otherwise what would life be if one has to choose between these two options? Both seem selfish, both seem limited. And this is one option, that there could be a creation of a new humanity. Call it by whatever names. Names are not important. Superhumanity, divine humanity, Superman. Names are not important, because sometimes they may become breeding ground for the ego. Superman, let's see the Superman. But well, a new humanity. A new humanity which is not driven by the ego, which is not driven by selfish desire, motivated only for one's own preservation and aggrandization, but a new humanity, a different humanity, a nobler, wiser, more loving, more caring, more true to itself, more true to life, divine in a sense, whatever way we want to put it, a new humanity. And that's why many of us have come here or have been called here. Now in this new humanity, people often look for what are the signs, where is the new humanity? So it is evolving along two lines. Sri Aurobindo spoke about these two lines of evolution, though semi-humorously, but there is a deep truth in it. There is the usual humanity. I won't use the word ordinary because it's pejorative, but a humanity which is centered around food, shelter, expansion of desire, aggrandization of name, surname, glorification of me and my. That's one humanity. I don't want to give it a name. That's the common lot. But out of this lot, there is a new humanity which is developing, and one can feel it, sense it, know it. And it's developing along two lines, which Sri Aurobindo, as I said, semi-humorously in a letter to Dilip Kumar Roy, remarked that there is a homo intellectualis and a homo psychicus. This is recognizable. Homo intellectualicus is trying through the mind to reach out to what is beyond. It's a good effort. But when the mind starts going higher and higher, it enters into a dizzy vortex of its own mind space, because mind space is a vast space. For every viewpoint, there is a counterpoint. And for every counterpoint, there is a third point. And it goes on moving in circles till it falls silent and it enters into a vast impersonality, Nirguna Brahma, and calls it the ultimate. Mind, that's how it is. But every effort to exceed oneself is beautiful. So, well, that's homo intellectualis. That's one route. But there is another humanity whose voice is not so much heard because they don't make headlines. They don't, they are not called on television shows to discuss, for example, the America-Russia problem. no, it's America-world problem, sorry. So this, but they are there as the silent humanity, which is actually the force and the strength of the human lot. And this silent humanity is growing beautifully, and it is growing into the depths, homo psychicus. It feels the truth. It may not be able to express it intellectually. It knows it intuitively. It may not be able to give convincing answers or logical explanations. It has not read Vedanta. It has not read the famous philosophy. It's not read Kant and Hegel and Bertrand Russell. But it is there, and very beautifully it is emerging. And that's the humanity where there is the blossoming of the psychic life. That's the beauty of the psychic life. It doesn't believe in beating around, but it is there. And I see more and more such humanity. I must say, India is blessed to have this touch of the psychic, and it's so beautiful. Simple folks who have not, if you tell them that, life divine, no. But they understand, they're very direct, intuitive perception of life. They know, for example, that transformation is going to be because they have seen the lotus bloom in the pond. And if the mud and mire can climb up in a lotus, so who can deny earth nature climbing to the divine? It's their logic. Very intuitive. So they don't go into all kinds of analysis, but they know it. So this homo psychicus, one of its prominent expression of this homo psychicus is the capacity for gratitude. In my personal experiences with people, vast variety, traveling all over the world, also as a psychiatrist, all kind of human beings somehow, much though I have loved solitude and still love it, but it has been most denied. So, his leela. But I have seen that you can almost say that this person belongs to a different category. There are people who feel grateful. They feel grateful just for no reason. They are going through distress, but they are full of gratitude. You do a little thing. I mean, as seekers on the path, we know that we don't do anything, but that's a different story. But if something has been done for them, even little, you see how they express the gratitude. And in my own practice, I have seen their recovery from problems is much faster. This is just an observation, since I don't believe in publishing reports. And I know that most of the reports that are published are all skewed reports, so I don't... And there is no time for all that. Then they will say, get a scale to measure gratitude. But gratitude is the expression of psychic life in matter. And the mother even goes on to say, she says, the nobility of a person is measured by his capacity for gratitude. You see, there are so many wonderful examples in Indian thought. But I'll give few from Mother and Shurbindo's life. There was a man whom the mother would, you know, he was a very uncouth man, but he, whenever he went and he could have a easier access to mother, and mother would be very extremely kind. She's kind as such. But people could notice that she is extremely kind to this person. And once Champaklalji asks her, what is there about him? What is there about him that we see that you have an exceptionally kind and affectionate attitude toward this man? He is quite uncouth and he has his own... So mother says something very interesting. She says, you know, when I came here first time, I was looking for Shurbindo's house and I asked this man, he happened to be on the road, I asked this man, where is Shurbindo's house? Where does Shurbindo live? And he pointed it out to me. He just pointed, not even the road, not the path. He just pointed out, where does Shurbindo live? It was such an eye-opener to me that, you know, people... Because often people now, when they ask sometimes, where is the ashram? I always feel it's a good thing to walk an extra mile. I love to, you know, I say, okay, I'll take you along, because this story comes in my mind. Let's see how the divine responds. There's another very beautiful story where there were people in the traveling in the train and they were speaking about mother. They were coming to Pondicherry and there was a person there among those whom we, in our ignorant pride, call as menial folk. Shurbindo learned this in prison. He says, you know, in our ignorant pride, we call as chhotto lok. But how the divine looks differently. So he hears the stories, and when they are going to get down at Chennai, because they have to travel to Pondicherry, he says, I don't know whether I'll be ever able to go to your mother or not. I've been hearing about your mother. But I feel somewhere moved and, you know, please give this little coin to her from my side. And they took the coin and said, mother, we met somebody in the train, and he gave. Mother kept it in the hand and for a long time she is holding it. She goes into trance. She says, the divine will find it difficult to repay him. See, divine's way of gratitude is very different. And we have so many stories of, you know, in Ramayana when Kevati is taking, ferrying across. So gratitude is the expression of the psychic life. It's the expression of nobility. And it directly contradicts selfishness and egoism. Egoistic people never feel gratitude. You may pray for them, you may do anything for them. For them, everything is measured by the money they can give you. And most often, even not that. I have had such instances, of course, you just smile because you have seen life after all, that you may do whatever needs to be done for someone and the person just takes it for granted. And then one is reminded of what the mother says. She says an egoistic man cannot feel gratitude. Why? Because if anything good happens in his life, he thinks it's me, my effort. Or maybe chance. Throw it on chance. And if something bad happens to him, then you know where the buck stops and where you throw everything. God has done this to me. Why has God done this to me? And the mother says, if you take your ordeals as a grace, in fact, she says, be grateful for all the ordeals because they are the shortest way to take you to the goal. How beautiful it is. There are so many instances which I know. Be grateful. One of them was Jugalda, who used to teach in late Jugalda, who used to be the registrar in the ashram school knowledge section. So once somebody saw him, you know, almost half limping as if one leg is in pain. And he asked him that, what happened? He says, nothing, it's a corn. Very painful corn. Why don't you go get it operated? Come tomorrow. The person was a doctor. No, don't say this. Why? He says, you know, it reminds me constantly of mother because every time there is a pressure and there is a pain, I say, Ma. You see? So he is happy and grateful that there is a little corn which comes as a reminder to express gratitude. See, this is the measure of a human. It's a very rare quality. Mother speaks of that in her story. You know, every other... Why it is so rare? Because even sometimes divine qualities can make us feel great. It's very strange. But it's so true. Ah, I am sincere. Who are these people? Insincere lot? Well, that's not sincerity to start with. Because if one has really tried to practice any of the virtues, one will understand. It's not easy. But generally, there is this tendency. That's what she shows in that little story, virtues. So any quality we develop, concentration, ability to concentrate, truthfulness. See, automatically, like a shadow, something comes. I never speak the truth. This is the only lie that I am speaking. Means that's how people... I never speak lie. Oh God. And then quietly says under the breath, this is the only one I have spoken lie. But see, people who genuinely even practice. I'm talking of there people who genuinely, they like to either remain silent or speak the truth. There are people and that's wonderful. But then they start feeling proud. We are truthful. Look at this fellow. Isn't it? See, any of these qualities, virtues, that's how gods start quarreling between themselves. Read the stories, Puranas. Ah, even sun god is saying, I don't allow any shadow. So he cast out his wife Chaya, though it's a symbolic story. But gratitude is so modest. On the roadside you can find it. And people, and mother says, she comes at the end. So all of them are asking, who are you? She says, I'm sorry, but you know I don't carry an I card and nobody really recognizes me. And then mother ends by saying, my name is gratitude. It brings modesty. Why it brings modesty unlike other qualities? It brings modesty because gratitude by the very nature means it's a recognition of the grace in my life. This is the big difference in those who practice yoga and go through bhakti and surrender. It's an antidote to the ego. Jnanis develop, I'm a jnani. Others are ajnani. Of course, jnani is nothing to do with reading books. But many people think that we have read so many books, we can call, give lectures, we are very erudite. I remember once, first time when I came to ashram, I mean, not first time, but settled here for good. So I was coming to Auroville in a car packed with some other speakers. Okay, speakers are a very difficult category. So, I don't identify myself as one of them. She is making me speak all over, but that's different. So they say, you have come, okay, where are you working, all this. So I said, I haven't yet, you know, I'm yet to approach, I had just come. So they said, better, you know, they gave me all kinds of suggestions. And then they said, better, you know, if you go to the authority, they'll just send you to the dining room. So I said, why has he said this? What's wrong with dining room? It's wonderful. I had worked 20 days in dining room and I know it's a marvelous experience. Why? Because every time you clean the plate, I used to feel, mother, that's all I can do. But my plate, please do. That's how mother spoke to Dhyuman Bhai. Dhyuman Bhai said, mother, I'll do your work, you do my work. What is our work? Work is to, you know, the yoga part. So I said, this is so wonderful. Why is he saying as if dining room work is something very low, below the dignity? I've met some of the people so happy, joyous and working 7 days constantly. And I mean, it's so amazing. I sometimes wonder that I wish I could exchange something like that. It's a privilege to be there. But this is the arrogance that develops in the mind. All of them devotees of Sri Aurobindo, without a doubt. Great speakers. But you see, I kept quiet because sometimes silence is golden. So you see, gratitude automatically means acknowledging the divine. Only person who acknowledges grace can have gratitude. And then grace for what? For everything. So in the ashram there, I met a person. He was in care, elderly person. His name was Gobind Bhai. I think he was from Gujarat. And he was in care, always looking happy. 80, always smiling. Sometimes he will give something written, scribbled on a note. Some little chit of paper from Sri Aurobindo and the mother, he'll hand out to all of us doctors when we take around. And it was very sweet of him. So whenever you ask him, how are you? He would say, by the grace. He would raise both the hands and say, by the grace. So I said, this is very beautiful. But I wanted to know a little more. So he said, you know, mother has said, if you say I am good and anything, you know, the ego creeps in. And there are forces watching. You're good? Okay. Let's check it out. But the moment you recognize grace, they are miles away. That's how mother puts it. When the grace operates upon a human life, the adverse forces stay miles away. They don't come near. Why they don't come near is not because the grace will kill them or destroy them. They will get converted. You see, such is the action of grace. And they don't want. They want to keep their empire of the ego. So to always feel grateful. So whenever, one of the things that has got into my system, I can't say practice, but got into my system. One is that any time of the day or night, anybody wishes anything, good morning, good evening, good night, I say, good morning. So they ask, why morning? I said, you should be inwardly always in a state of mourning. Mourning is hope, mourning is joy, mourning is enthusiasm. Mourning is beauty, mourning is truth, mourning is light. And the other is, how are you doing? Grace, that's it. Now, it doesn't mean that there are no difficulties, because people interpret like that. Oh, that means, oh, thank God, your health is good, your this is good. I say, no, everything is grace. Why are we worried? Health is good, not good. I have seen people when they were, you know, they were stuck to the bed because of some, you know, illness or something. I have seen that they felt that, well, this is so nice. Mother has put me here so that I can now concentrate on her, remember her. I was running around like a monkey. This is the way gratitude automatically opens to grace. It sees grace in everything. Shobhinda has used a word, two words he has used in synthesis after all the, principles of yoga and the foundations. Wonderful book, of course, one of my first books. Beautiful, everything. But if you see in the end, last chapters in yoga of integral perfection, two things which he says are important, faith and grace. Faith and the divine shakti. In the synthesis, it is divine shakti. And in The Mother, what does he write? There are only two things to walk through life armored against all fear, peril and disaster. Look at what a blanket thing. Often people tell me, you know, when, because I travel a lot, every time they hear that I am going to the US, they said, my son would tell me, Dad, be careful. He says, you can go anywhere you like. I said, don't worry. By the grace. So you see, this thing which comes. So she says, armored against all fear, peril and disaster. And I have actually seen it several times in my own life and so many stories. To walk through life armored against all fear, all peril and disaster, only two things are needed, two that go always together. And the first is, of course, the divine grace. And on your side, something we have to do, because people want, what should we do in this yoga? Teach us some techniques, teach us some method. This is a psychological yoga. Shobhinda has said this several places. It's not done by breath control and mind control. It's not Hatha Yoga and Raja Yoga. Hatha Yoga is body control and breath control. Raja Yoga is breath control and mind control. It is Adhyatma Yoga, which comes at the next level. So on your side, an inner state. It's not something to be shown outside. Made up of faith, sincerity and surrender. And then when she speaks of faith, this is called Kalyan Shraddha. And this Kalyan Shraddha recognizes the divine in everything. And therefore it is full of gratitude. It's this gratitude where if things are going according to me good, then that is a calculated thing, you know. That's not, it's always in Hindi we have these two words, that there is pyar and there is vyapar. Pyar is love. And vyapar is business. So with the divine, we should not have a transactional relationship. Business. What I have given, what you are giving me, calculation. But to be always full of gratitude. Why? Well, do we need a reason? Today I wake up, well, I have a chance again. Oops, I did it again last night. But today morning I am given a new chance. Look at how beautiful life can be. And as the day proceeds, everything, sometimes I feel very often, even the fact that one is able to breathe, the heart beats, and this in medical school I used to marvel. My God, what a machine, if we want to call it. It starts in the womb. And at least for 75-80 years, despite doing everything that we can to finish it, the fellow keeps beating. Of course, sometimes he beats us also. When we do things, silly things, then it beats very fast and is giving us a beating reminder. But look at it. I mean, just to imagine that such a life has been given to us, which can be wonderful, just the gift of life, the greatest gift. Some people form a very pessimistic idea about life. Oh, it's a hell, it's a suffering. You know, there are philosophies built upon it that life is full of suffering. And people preach it. So I ask them sometimes, okay, imagine Yamaraj writes to you today, my child, life is full of suffering. Call me, I'll come. Relieve you of it. We make a gospel of, you know, yes, suffering is there. What's there? It's part of the process. Very often it's actually a grace, because it's a reminder. Pain and suffering are a reminder that, well, what I thought happy about in my comfort zone, it comes to remind me it's imperfect. So when a relationship breaks, it's a reminder. Not that I am bad or the other person is bad. That's the common way. Well, as human beings, we are imperfect. We are limited. It's okay. We need to go beyond it. We need to discover. It's a reminder, that's all. How would we be reminded of these things? So pain and suffering comes to remind us. So gratitude. Thank God I was lost in this haze and maze of seeking comfort and pleasure. Thank you, you have broken my comfort zones. Often I share this story of this lady working in a empress, servant girl who broke a very expensive china glass. So she comes, she is very afraid that now the empress is going to ask for my head. So, but she has to say this truth. So she bows her head and says, sorry, but the glass, your most precious glass, has been broken. The empress was a mystic. She remains quiet for a while and then she says, good, good. The mirror that I every day looked into, which would tell me a lie, has gone. Every day I would look and dress and say, ah, I'm looking so beautiful. Thank God it has gone. It's an attitude. Then gratitude opens the door. Mother has used the word, it opens all doors to the grace. The moment we take something as a grace, now grace of course is always acting, it doesn't wait for us. But when we grumble and complain, then we bring in all kinds of forces, adverse forces. But when we have gratitude, then automatically we will see that a door opens. It's a recognition. It's an acceptance of the divine in my life. And then the grace acts in a much more concrete and powerful way, because, you know, one has taken this as a gratitude. And there are stories of so many mystics, saints, sages. Look at Sri Aurobindo. Sometimes he doesn't know that next meal will be there or not. It's, you know, mother has said how to express gratitude to Sri Aurobindo. She said the best way is to be a living example of his teachings. I said, Mother, this is the most difficult thing. But that's true. And what an example he has set. He doesn't know next meal will be provided or not, because there is no money. And he's not alone. There are 3-4 more around. They are happy. Somehow they know something will happen. And Sri Aurobindo writes in one of his letters, he says, I know God will provide, but he has contracted a bad habit of providing at the last moment. Humorously. Never complains. Never says anything. You know, that is our example. And the mother gives her own example. As a child, she would grow up and, you know, the parents couldn't afford a second pair of shoes. So what she would do, she discovered an ingenious idea. She's a good painter. She would keep changing the paint on the shoes. They were lacquered shoes. So she would keep changing the paint, giving the impression it's a new shoe. What a beautiful way. And they have shown us the way. People don't know that, you know, they have lived in what conditions. Why to bring the divine life to all of us? Where very easily Sri Aurobindo could have, you know, done so many things. Tagore comes and tells him, why don't you come to Europe? Europe is ready to listen. It will listen to you. And Shobhita says, when Europe is ready, Europe will come here. That's all. He didn't go around preaching, asking money, donations, even till date. One of the best things that I find, when money is needed, it will come. Everything will come. We should remain always open to the grace. And the key to opening the doors of the grace is faith, and along with that, gratitude. Gratitude instantly. Take everything as a grace and it will be a grace. Because actually it is a grace, but we are not able to recognize it because we have our own ideas of good and bad. Basically, whatever flatters me and gives me comfort and pleasure is good. How foolish an idea this is. God should behave according to my criteria. Imagine, he is not Bruce Almighty, thankfully, who is putting a click button on computer, all prayers granted. How silly it would be. 1,000 people are praying for the same job. Everybody is paying some money or going to a shrine. How can God do this impossible trick? But each one is looked after in his own way. And whatever ordeals come, whatever we meet in life, are what we are meant to meet. And very often, sometimes people look up to others because they are rich, they are in comfort. Read this story of Sri Aurobindo called A Dream. Dream. It's originally in Bengali, Swapna, but fortunately English translation is available. And there you see, we look up, we think, oh, see, God is specially kind on them. But if you meet, you interact, you discover what a hollow life it can be. Hollow and shallow. So, as they say, to the rich he gives money, to the poor he gives wisdom. Make your choice. Of course, if the rich understand that this money is a gift of the grace, they should use it for the right purpose, then yes, even for them, the outer wealth and the inner wealth, that makes something very beautiful because you become a very powerful instrument of the divine. So be full of gratitude. That's what all of us. And there is nothing more sweet, more tangible, more dear, I would say, to the divine than a heart which comes to the divine full of gratitude from morning till night. A day well spent is gratitude. A day of challenges is gratitude. I had my own share today. I learned something. I made a mistake. No, sometimes 3-4 mistakes. Sometimes very quickly in a row. You lost your temper here and you say, oh, no, no, no. And then you lost again. And then by the time you are with the third person, surely you are trying to check and you lost it. But then, thank you for making me conscious. I have learned that still that bug is inside which switches on anger inside. Mother, thank you for making me conscious. Remove it with a surgeon's scalpel. So whole day, so many things we become conscious of. And then at night, again, a day, so many things happen. And if one has lived a day in the service of the divine in whatever way, obviously, it is so satisfying, so gratifying. And the fact that one is never alone. When one sleeps, Mother is there, watching over us. One last little story. We've taken the relics of Sri Aurobindo to Lodi Center in California. So I remember because relics are kept for a day and then they are installed the next day. And I was involved in it and one of the speakers. So I still remember that whole night. I was so happy inside that, you know, why? Because Sri Aurobindo is here. Of course, he's everywhere. Now, this is a, you know, technical argument. I'm not going into it. He is everywhere. But when it materially manifests, there is a difference. Well, we love, the person whom we love is always with us, but at the same time, when you look at a photograph in your purse, it gives a greater joy. And when you meet, the joy is tripled. So they don't cancel each other. That Sri Aurobindo being within and everywhere doesn't mean that outwardly you don't get a joy. That is silly. because we are total beings. So next day I was just sharing this. I said, you know, just to live with this thought that when I sleep in the city, Shobindu is watching over us, keeping a watch. That is something which I used to feel and still feel in the ashram atmosphere, that, you know, Shobindu is awake while I sleep. There is a line from one of his poems, "To R on her birthday," where Shobindu writes precisely this: "Fear not, rejoice, fear not for the waves that swell, storms that thunder, winds that sweep. Always our captain holds the rudder well. He does not sleep." That's how the Upanishad puts it. That he who is awake when the world is asleep. Nityo nityanam chetanash chetananam. So, just to know that the divine exists, just to know that he is the one who never sleeps. We may fall a million times, but he is there. And if I have the faith that he lift me out, mother's words these are, he will lift you as many times. Just to know that the divine exists is enough for the heart to be full of gratitude. Okay, so I think blabbered enough. Jai Ma, thank you so much, especially for this beautiful place. Yes.
Okay. Would you like to have any question? So, please.
Yes.
What do you mean by push for yoga?
Push for yoga?
Pushpa
Yagya. Okay. What do I mean by Pushpa Yagya? So I am deriving this term from, there is a word in Ayurveda, very few people know it. It's called Pushpa Ayurveda. So what is, when you apply flowers for medicinal purposes. And since I have used this word Pushpa Ayurveda, I have my own understanding. I have not gone into its technicalities. I feel people take out essence and all this. This is a complicated process. Keep a flower near you, it helps heal. This is my own experience. Flowers heal. They are living, conscious representations. We don't need to even crush and take, essence. So this idea of carrying flowers is something so beautiful. They have a healing power just as they are. Now, what are flowers? Mother has said, they are offering, they are psychic, they represent the psychic. They are offering of the vegetal kingdom to the divine. They are already engaged in yagya. What is yagya? We offer to the divine. So when we offer to the divine something, it becomes yagya. So what does yagya do? It lifts and purifies. That's what a yagya, the fire. So flowers are anyway offering themselves to the divine. Now, when we are engaged in tending the flowers, not with the idea of, you know, making money or, you know, people praising me, etc., etc., but just simply, they are offering themselves to the divine. Let me connect with them. Then what happens with this aspiration? What is the aspiration? That with these flowers, my aspiration is also rising to the divine. See, that's how mother speaks of cherry blossom tree. And this is an experience one can have. And she speaks about this experience also, that if you sit by the side of a tree early morning, this is something which I know for sure, evening by direct experience, you can actually feel the aspiration of the tree rising up. It connects with your aspiration, because we are not separate entities. We may believe we are separate. We have, as mother says humorously, man has convinced himself to believe he is separate. That's okay. But when you are with the flowers and connected with them, of course, as I said, it's not for just impressing, or you need money and it's okay, but it's not for, you know, with the idea of making money, but just to create beauty and joy, which is what they do. It is a yagya. So yagya is not about just lighting up a fire. That is hardly a yagya. That's mostly a ritual. So it's all those who are engaged here in this tending of this garden, especially because, you know, especially because nobody much speaks about it. It's, and let me tell you one thing, while okay, it's okay, since we talk about, you know, arranging, you know, there is a great beauty and joy in its own natural way of coming up. Mother once speaks to Satprem and describes, have you seen a wild garden? And I have been impressed how things come up there without the intervention of the mind. Mind has its own way of trimming, pruning, doing things, arranging it. Okay, well, mind is like that. But nature works very organically. We don't understand her ways because it's not according to the mental ideas. But there's a great beauty in that. A beauty that you can, there's a wholeness in that. So anyway, that's my way of looking at it. There's a wholeness. I've walked into, you know, I can give an example. As a child, I used to walk. There was a garden where we used to go as children to pluck flowers for my father to do puja, parents. So I used to walk through that garden. I've seen that. And I've seen the Mughal garden in Delhi. And there is a world of difference. This garden was rejuvenating. Nobody had made this garden. But it was there. I'm sure all of us have had this experience. But the Mughal garden is made. It's something artificial. So, while mind is there, that's a different. But everybody engaged in this. It's a yagya going on. That's the feeling. When I come here, I actually feel that all these flowers are kind of aspiring to the mother. And that's what creates a beautiful atmosphere. Because in return, what comes from the divine is the divine atmosphere. Divine grace. Divine solicitude. So that's why it is a yagya. Yagya has almost nothing to do. Well, people will get very annoyed. Very little to do with lighting a fire and putting things and chanting mantras. Okay? Well, little to do. People get very annoyed. Eh? Strict ritualists. How dare you say that? But this is the truth. If you can't feel it, then yes, okay. If you don't feel the inner fire, then okay, light one outside, at least something we will do. If you don't have the divine presence inside, then okay, fine. Something outside is okay. But the real temple is here and the yagya is here. And this does not contradict outside. When you experience the mother's presence here, this adds to the joy. That's the beauty, when the inner and the outer meet. But the inner is first. Okay, so I think, thank you so much, Jai Ma.